Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon, and today we are joined by Ronnie Hamilton of Ole Miss. Ronnie is a unique story. He made the transition from football player to basketball coach. He has made a name for himself as a great recruiter, a tremendous on-court player development coach, and more importantly, a great person. We talk about his path, his journey from Division II assistant to high major assistant at the Division I level, and talk about some of his mentors and challenges along the way. We hope you enjoy. If you do enjoy, please write us a review and subscribe to the podcast. And please, if you're interested in finding out more or being a part of Rising Coaches, please join us at our conference, July 19th through the 21st in Charlotte. Again, thank you for listening. We hope you enjoy. Ronnie, how you doing, buddy?
Adam, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you taking some time this morning to jump on the podcast.
I'm glad to be here. Appreciate you.
Yeah. All right, Ronnie, tell us, I know you guys started in coaching a little bit different. You played football, and like for people that know you now, they probably look at you and be surprised, but I remember like Tarleton State, Ronnie Hamilton, where you were probably about 30 pounds heavier, stocky, ready to hit some people. So you started off actually as a football player, right?
Yeah, I did. You know, I got a unique path, probably for most guys in the profession. You know, I was a two-sport guy in high school and always had this you know, dream or goal of being a college basketball coach if, you know, the professional football thing didn't work out. And so always had this kind of in the back of my mind and ended up, you know, playing football in college at Duke. Had a small cup of tea with the New York Giants after I graduated. The track, like most high schools, you had to look at everything, but it was kind of the first entry in terms of coaching at all and trying to pursue the basketball thing. And then after a year there, I got fortunate to get a grad assistant position at UNC Pembroke, which was close, right down the road, and took the job. Didn't even look to see what their record was. Was just trying to get in.
Sign me up.
Yeah, exactly. And I literally didn't look at the record until they offered me a job, and they were 0-28 the year before that. So I was just happy to, you know, be a part of a staff, be a part of you know, college basketball. And those 2 years were great for me. I tell people all the time it was probably the best thing ever happened to me, because at Division II level as a grad assistant, you can do everything. You know, you can be on the road, you can be on the floor, you can, you know, obviously involved with practice and game planning and things of that nature. You get to wear so many hats. So, you know, it was like a trial by fire, you know, so to speak. So I got a lot of hands-on experience just in those 2 years. I got my master's. And then, again, just, you know, real fortunate. I got a job at Tarleton State Division II school, like you mentioned. And, you know, I moved out to Texas. I'd never been there before. And went to a Division II school that was, you know, one of the best at the time and still is in Division II. You know, if you ask Division II guys, you know, name the blue bloods, Division II basketball, you know, the Duke, Carolinas, Kentucky, and Kansas in Division I, and Tarleton's going to be on that list in terms of Division II. So I went to a place where they had won before. Lon Reisman, the head coach, is in the Hall of Fame there now, just retired, won over 600 games in his career, got a chance to work for coach and learn so much, and, you know, recruiting in that area and all those things. It just kind of helped really propel me to where I'm at now. So I got a different path, unique path. Been real fortunate along the way to work for a lot of great coaches and be blessed with some great opportunities. And now obviously here at Ole Miss, you know, in a great, great situation.
All right, so let's go back a little bit. Like, at what age did you know that you wanted to coach basketball? Obviously, you were really good at football growing up, mm-hmm. and probably knew that that was the path for you as an athlete. But how old were you when you really decided that coaching basketball is something that you might want to do?
Yeah, probably around 13, 14. You know, to be honest, right kind of, you know, I said basketball was my first, you know, passion. It was my first love. And I played it, and I was good. And just around high school, I ended up just getting, you know, becoming better. You know, stopped growing, you know. So, you know, I wasn't going to be, you know, 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", you know, anything like that. But I just started to become a better football player. as opposed to basketball. But man, when I was in the seventh, eighth grade, you know, I grew up in ACC country. So, you know, watching all those games on Tobacco Road, you know, I watched, you know, watched every game you possibly could watch. You know, I started being interested in just, you know, I would go to, there's a huge tournament, the GlaxoSmithKline Christmas tournament that they would play, and all the top, you know, high school teams would come in. And so I'd go there, you know, every Christmas, I'd like my Christmas present. So you'd watch all these great players come through, and Oak Hill was coming through, and just different teams. So, I started to be interested in just, you know, following from that perspective. You know, Bob Givens used to put on a tournament right around Memorial Day. So this is before the EYBL and Adidas Gauntlet and Under Armour Association. And so there's really no shoe affiliations. It wasn't really a shoe team, so to speak. And then so everybody would come play. I mean, I remember, you know, watching Omar Cook and Tim Thomas with New Jersey play and Riverside Church Hall. So I would go watch that, you know, over Memorial. So it's always been something that kind of, like I said, been in the back of my mind, thought about. But around, you know, around 13, 14, 8, 7, 8, 9th grade, you know, it was in my thought process. And, you know, there's our local newspaper where I grew up, it's called the Raleigh News and Reserve. It's one of two major ones. And they would do like a scholar athlete of the month. So I think it was around my junior year in high school, and, you know, had some success, as far as high school. And so I won this recognition, and they actually used a series of questions: favorite book, favorite movie, who's the most influential person, your favorite teacher, favorite subject, on and on and on and on. And one of the questions was, what do you want to be, you know, when you grow up, or, you know, what do you want to do for a living, you know? And the answer at that time, and I was getting recruited in football and host things, was be a college basketball coach. So it's something I tell people all the time, something I've always, you know, always have thought of, always have desired to do and wanted to do for a long, long time. It didn't happen just by kind of accident. But to answer your question, around 7th, 8th, 9th grade, 13, 14, 15 years old, something that started creeping to my mind. And like I said, I was lucky to be able to do what I love to do every day.
Okay, so you find yourself at Duke, 18 years old, football player, trying to figure it all out, and you've had this passion from a young age of college basketball. Are you like trying to sneak into Cameron Indoor, watch practice? Are you at every single game? Being around Duke, did you get any type of exposure to the basketball program there and catch anything from that experience?
Yeah, not as much.
It's like Fort Knox over there, isn't it?
Oh, well, definitely that. You know, now I was close with the guys. I came into school with, like, Corey McGetty was in my incoming class. So I knew Corey, and you know, and they were obviously really, really good there at the same time, you know, as they are now. Coach K's done a phenomenal job. But, you know, like Carlos, Elton Brand and Will Avery and Tracy Lane, those guys were ahead of me. And so I knew those guys, you know, being around them as far as his classmates and peers. And those guys graduated, and then, you know, here comes Jay Williams Shane Battier and Dunleavy, those guys. So got a chance to know those guys. So I was around it from that standpoint. I would go to games. I wasn't camping out, though. I got to admit.
Did you like, you know, face paint? Face paint, no shirt on and stuff?
Yeah, I wasn't doing that. But I would go, you know, with big games and things like that. I just kind of followed from afar for a little bit because, you know, I was at that time, you know, really trying to focus on the football and seeing how far I could pursue that. But I was around it enough, and there was times I, you know, catch a practice. But it was at that point, really, like kind of when I was done playing, that I said, "I'm really, really focused on trying to pursue, you know, the coaching, the college basketball coaching part of it." So, but it was great to just even be around a program, you know, that is as successful and as good as they are and were when I was there, you know, at the time.
All right, I'm going to jump all over the place, so bear with me. But I'm just curious about this. You, your job at Ole Miss here, which you've been there for a year now, really your first opportunity being at that high major level. I know you were at Houston, but right. At the time they were probably transitioning probably from mid-major to that high level. But right. Now you're in the SEC, and this is your first stint there, coming from Middle Tennessee and just – you know, several mid-major programs. Right. Talk about the difference. Is there a difference recruiting at Middle Tennessee than there is at Ole Miss, and who you're going against and things you have to do to be able to secure players good enough there?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a great question. It's one of those ones you asked. And, you alluded to earlier as far as being at University of Houston. That was the tip of the iceberg in terms of just the difference. And I had that mindset when I took the job at University of Houston, because at the time when I was going there, was offered a job and got lucky enough to be there with Coach Dickey, they were transitioning initially when I took the job to what the Big East had been for years and years and years, the Georgetown, Syracuse, Villanova, St. John's, on. So it was the mindset where them guys were recruiting at that level. So I even had, I would make calls and ask to other guys in the profession that were already at, high major programs / Power Five schools on, what to expect, differences, advice, what need to do, and try to prepare myself. And so in that process, end up going into the American League, to the basketball only schools, decided to break away and kept the Big East name as it is right now, with Marquette and Creighton and those schools. So, but the American at the time was still Louisville for that year, UConn, Memphis, who were at that, rolling at the time when Coach Passon was there, and SMU, Larry Brown. So it felt like a high major league, in the players that you were competing against. So even being there, you had to figure out, trying to get those type of caliber players. And so being here now, year one, I feel like, it's not just totally new as far as, the level of the adjustment. And what I've learned from there and even in this year is it comes down to relationships. There's some subtle differences, but the relationships that you've built all along the way are relationships that are going to allow you to still be able to recruit at a high level, attract, very, very the most talented guys that, you're trying to, add to your program and to your team. I think you have to do a lot of more, you have to start earlier, in the process, because of recruitments, those guys identified at an early age in terms of, how good they are, and they're still falling in the cracks. Whether it be John Moran or some of those, so you're always trying to make sure you're evaluating and discovering who those best players will be. But there is an awareness of guys at an early age, so to be able to get involved, early and get into that process of building a relationship with the kid and his coaches and his families and those things, are one of the biggest differences, I would say. Because at the mid majors, you make him recruit a kid for a short amount of time, just whether when you identify them or just when that point of his recruitment starts to really get serious, as opposed to maybe a high major level. But I do think recruiting is recruiting. I tell people that, it's still all the things that you do, whether you're at the Division II level or you're at Ole Miss, those things, they still apply. You got to be sincere and genuine. Every school has, things that you want to sell in terms of what makes that place unique and special. But the relationships and just being able to relate to the recruits and their parents and the coaches are most important, And so I think here what was allowed us to be successful is that obviously Coach Davis and how long he's been doing as a head coach, he has relationships established throughout the whole Southeast and obviously in Mississippi where he's from. And then, myself and our whole staff, have some relationships that we've built along the way, along the years, that allowed us to, be involved with some of the very best, prospects at this level.
And obviously I think the other thing, which you touched on is like the evaluation piece, which I think is so underrated. And I want to ask you this question. I think I know the answer, but I'm not going to say what I think. I don't want to bias your response here. So, you have some programs that recruit to a certain system, and they have a certain type of player that fits what they do. For instance, like Belmont, if Belmont's recruiting a kid, they're going to be able to shoot the ball. And then there's other programs that get the most talented guys that they can and kind of adjust to them. Tell me where Coach Kermit Davis lies in that field, and tell me, like, what he is looking for in recruits.
Yeah, that's a great question. Great question. A coach, I think best coaches can blend the two, if that makes sense. And you do see it. You know, I think the teams that become staples and be the teams that are most consistent, whether it's a Belmont, who you know, Coach Burgess retired, done a great job. Even if it's let's say a North Carolina, you kind of know, you know, how Roy Williams wants to play. He has a system in place. He's going to try to recruit to that system. And so Coach Davis is very similar. His style of play has developed a lot over the last, I would say, 7-8 years. And since the time I've been with him, in terms of what he's looking for and what he, you know, what he wants in terms of how we want to play and guys that fit that style. And so obviously you want to get the most talented guys you can get, and then get the most talented, you know, with character and all those intangible things well, but the most talented that will also fit, you know, the way you want to play. And when you can do that, man, then you have really, really, really good teams, and you can have sustainable success. And so, you know, we're out recruiting as a staff, you know, knowing that in mind. You know, the one thing that Coach, you know, really evolved, you know, again, like probably the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, is we've had more and more success, and is that he wants guys that can, you know, shoot. It's kind of what you said before. Like, I'll see a guy, and he's real athletic, and he can make plays around the rim, and may be a great guy. He can just, you know, he can pass it, and, you know, be the guard, and just do it. And if he can't shoot, you know, that's the first thing that the coach is going to ask, and it's going to probably, you know, be on his mind in terms of, you know, how he thinks of him as far as, you know, us trying to really sign a guy. And then also skill level. And that's even, again, he's evolved even more so from year to year. It's, you know, and it's, I guess now going on 6 years, I'm going to be working with coaches and guys that have, you know, IQ and quote-unquote skill level to be able to just go make innate plays without you necessarily have to teach and manufacture them on the court. So we guys who have guys that have skill, and guys who know how to play or have IQ, or kind of two things. And a lot of that, you know, is where the game's being played now, you know, with just really kind of being positionless. I know people use that kind of that term loosely, you know, just kind of, it's almost a cliche or whatever, but we like guys that can play, you know, multiple positions, very versatile. So you just kind of have five guys that can all pass, dribble, shoot. Now, it's not always the case. Sometimes, you know, our five, you know, we had a guy middle, Brandon Walters, that wasn't necessarily as effective as maybe like a Ja'Cory Williams. And we had two different fives this year at Ole Miss, one that could kind of pick and pop, one that wasn't as much so. But in a perfect world, you know, I know we'd love to be able to do that. But definitely, you know, four guys that can all do that. So I think you watch teams play now, you'll see that, you know, whether it was Reggie Upshaw or Nick King, and even now, you know, Blake Henson was a freshman, you know, him and KJ Buff and both are guys that, you know, as forwards can step out, you know, shoot it, drive it, and play make. And so that's the thing that Coach really is emphasizing and looking for, you know, as we're trying to put together a roster and put together a recruiting class.
Yeah, and that seems to be just the way the game's going, too, with shooting being such a premium put on that. But, yeah, I would have said, and I don't know, and I haven't really studied Coach Davis a ton over the years, just kind of followed it as a casual fan and checking in every once in a while with scores and catching a game on TV here and there. But I would have guessed that he just wanted players. And that was always from an outsider's perspective, like when looking at what you guys were doing in Middle Tennessee, get me the best talented dudes out there because he can really, really coach. And it seems like he can really coach anybody. And I've always been impressed with, man, you guys, no matter what, no matter who's on the roster, he seems to find a way to get the most out of them and win. And talk a little bit about him and his style, and because I feel like a lot of people don't really appreciate how good of a coach he is unless they're around it all the time.
Yep. Yeah. No, you're right, and that's why I said splinter both. Even from any previous question, I do think the great coaches can play the strengths of their team, and so a testament to what you're saying. Sometimes we haven't had a true point guard in the sense of true point guard, but we just play. He's found a way to put five guys out there that are the most talented, toughest guys, and they're going to defend and do those things and still be very, very effective. And so, they're part of, the most talented. But I think as he's bought, I think it's like maybe my first guy with coach, it was more so, okay, most talented guys, the toughest guys. But now, like I said, going back a little bit on the previous answer, there's a blend of it to where I think now we can figure it out once we get them to, and then we can also improve their toughness. We can coach the toughness part, but man, that skill level and the shooting part. But I do, I tell people all the time with Coach, he's I think I put him up against, and I'm biased, I've worked for him a long time, and think the world of him, but I put him up against anybody in terms of coaching and X and O and really, knowing how to get the best out of his teams. And, the fun part and the neat part, for us as a staff and me personally, and Coach Case, one of our other assistant coaches has been with him, going on 12 years, and Coach Watkins has now been with us for a year. But it's neat for us for now, the positive or one of the things you do get at this level is people now can recognize, that more so, because now your games are, your games on TV every night, get more exposure, you're all playing against, the Kentuckys and other people that are really, really good. And so now people can see it on full display. I think people saw it, and like you said, maybe here and there in different instances. At middle, obviously when you get in, say, Tormey, you have success, it gets recognized. But he's a tremendous coach. I've never seen him have an off day. And I think that's what makes him so good. When we go out and practice, whether it's just in the office himself, but especially, man, when we go out and we're doing something on the floor with our team, he's going to be as good as you would hope your best player is practicing every single day as a head coach. And so he never has an off day. He's a standard in place for the team, and he is a standard, but that standard never gets lowered, at any point in time and for any player. And so to be able to do that, every single day consistently for all the years he's done it and for every team and for every player is what makes him, really good. And, in games, he's great with just adjustments and X and O's. And so he just checks off every box that you would hope for a head coach. And obviously this year, was an example that didn't pick last, and get a chance to make the NCAA tournament year one. So he's great to work for, but been a great mentor for me, and I think just hopefully the best. There's still a lot more we're going to accomplish here at Ole Miss.
Yeah, no question. Does he morph into a different person? Because off the court, he's like the nicest guy in the world, and then on the court, he's on those guys, right? Like he is on it. Is it just as soon as he crosses the lines, like he just changes?
He does, and it's in a good way. Because he's really, really competitive. He's really detailed, and he's really intense. And when we start practice, when we get into those lines in terms of now it's time to go and try to get better as a team, that's his whole focus. And so, and the great thing about it, though, Adam, is that, sometimes – you may have a bad practice as a player or a team or maybe even an assistant coach. And that can drag on after practice is over to the next, to the next hour or the next day. As soon as practice is over, and how you just described it, then he's just back to being just Coach Davis in terms of just now, hey, it's over with. And I think that's one of his great qualities as well, is that, he can be demanding and expect the most out of his guys and coach them hard in those settings, as far as basketball is concerned. And then once that time period is over with, and then we're just, we're in the office or we're just it's about school or it's about, just in general, and then can flip that hat in terms of just, it's just coach. And things just don't linger on. And he has a great way about him from that standpoint. And I've learned you know, learn to really kind of, you know, take that from him in that respect. But he does. He's, you know, getting those lines, you know, then there's a seriousness about what we're trying to do and get accomplished, you know, that particular day, that particular practice.
Yeah, and he seems like he's on all of them the same, like best player, worst player, like he's going to coach you.
Yeah, no question. You know, and that's another thing that he always talk about, you know, whether it be to the team, whether it be to that particular guy, whether it be to us as a staff, is that when you can coach your hardest play, you know, your best player the hardest, then you're going to have a good team, you know, or sure, it should translate into your team being better. And so it just goes down the line, 1 through 15, 16, how many guys we may have, going to coach them all fairly, but man, he's going to always hold those guys accountable. And one thing he'll ask, you know, what is our best player? Hey, do you want to be, you know, what are your goals? You know, you want to be all the guys? Surely enough, you know, all of, you know, he's going to say it, and most guys are going to say, hey, yeah, coach, or you want to be a pro? Yeah, you know, Ray, yes, you know, if it's, you know, guy that's trying to, you know, become a, you know, one of the best players on the team, what's your goal? I want to be a star. And so, okay, if you want to be that, then I'm going to coach you that way every single day. So the time you forget that you want to be that, I'm going to remind you that you said, you know, you want to be this, and this is why I'm coaching that way. So guys understand that, you know, when he is demanding and holding them accountable, that is to get the most out of them and for them to maximize, you know, their ability and for our team to be the best that it can be.
Ronnie, I love it, man. Obviously, you want to be a head coach one day. What's like your dream job, dream situation? Is it going back to North Carolina and being the head coach in North Carolina or Duke one day, or just dream job, dream scenario, where you want to be in 5, 10 years, whatever?
Yeah, you know, my dream job has always been where I'm at, and I just kind of always had this philosophy, I'm just going to plant my boots and just, you know, just treat that like it is. And all of them have been really fortunate, Adam, and to be with some great coaches and staffs and places. And then I've been on the other side, even been more lucky to be in some great cities, whether it was Houston and New Orleans or Charleston, and now Oxford is great as well. So I've had that kind of just that mentality, and felt like if I did that, eventually I would get an opportunity to be a head coach, which is a goal of mine, short term and you know, long term, you know, hopefully shorter than longer, and wherever that may be. You know, I'm comfortable with, you know, to have an opportunity at some point in time to be able to blow my own whistle and call my own timeouts. But until that point comes, if it does, then I'm just going to try to be the best, you know, coach that I can be here at Ole Miss. You know, when I got started in it, you know, those obvious goals I had, one was, hey, be a Division I coach. You know, I started Division II, then it was a B, maybe, hey, let's, and can you be a high major coach? And then, you know, now the next, you know, next step would be at some point in time, hopefully, to be a head coach. So just keep working at it, and hopefully that opportunity will come sometime soon.
It'll come, man. And you're ready for it. You're ready right now. And I'm sure being around such great coaches that you've been around throughout your career has really helped you, because you can do it all, man. You can coach. You can recruit. You got the relationship piece down. You're a well-rounded dude. What's been the hardest job you've had, Ronnie?
I tell you, probably UNC Pembroke. To be really? Honest with you, you know, this first one, you know, you're doing so many different things. But I appreciate it. You know, I mean, you know, if I look back, I had to probably think of it. I think it all, you know, you agree with this, that they're all different in terms of, you know, what's required of them. They all have pros and cons. Was that the most glamorous job in terms of maybe pay and you know, all amenities? Probably not. It was my most toughest, but it's also probably my most rewarding because it was my first. But, you know, the thing you had to do, I had to be the strength coach. You know, I had to be that, you know, I was in charge of all the academics. You know, I was in charge of, you know, film and the travel. And so from a responsibility standpoint, it may have been the toughest. You know, you're the lowest guy on the totem pole, so to speak. So you kind of get, you know, you get to bear, you know, you bear some of the non-glamorous jobs of sweeping the floor. You know, just little things. But I look back on all that and glad that I did it. You know, there's some, you know, we get a lot of perks being here at this level, but there's some tough things about being here too. That's a little different, but I just wouldn't trade any of it at all, because I think it all, you know, gave me great experience and great, you know, challenges and insight into to what it really takes to be, like you said, a total coach, for lack of better words. And that's what, you know, I really wanted to be. I didn't want to be just a guy that just was a recruiter, or a guy that just, you know, just an XO guy, which is just, I never want to be labeled just one thing. And so I think just the combination of being at all different places I've been, you know, allowed me to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Ronnie, I was going through list yesterday of all our previous Rising Coaches Conference and everybody who came year by year. And it's crazy to think, man, it was 9 years ago. You were at Tulane at the time that you you came out to Vegas, man, and came to our conference, and want to let you know how much I appreciate that. And it's so fun to see where everyone's at now, because, man, everyone's career has taken them in different directions and here and there. But, man, everyone's career has taken off from 9 years ago.
Yeah.
And really cool to see, man. I really appreciate you being a part of it.
Man, well, I'm glad to be a part of it. And I tell you, man, what you have done for a lot of young coaches, just before, it's just, you know, your Rising Coaches, your mentorship, or you just your advice, or you know, just all the things, the connection that you allow people to come across with and to, you know, you've done a lot for a lot of us as far as young coaches that have progressed and still progressing to get us, you know, where we are in various points in our profession. So thank you, for what you do. You've done a lot for a lot of us.
Ronnie, I appreciate those words, man, and excited to see what your next steps are and all the success that you guys, I know, are going to have there at Ole Miss. So thanks again for everything and for being on the podcast.
Thanks, Adam. Appreciate it so much, man.